Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. I'm traveling this week, so sorry about the echoey sound, low quality laptop mic. I'll be back in the studio next week. I'm glad you're with us. I'd come down with bacillary angiomatosis if you infected me with the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, with what's coming.
Hey, Tony, here's what's coming. Be human and be yourself for best fundraising. Messy and authentic. That's how Brad Tun wants you to come to your fundraising relationships for best outcomes. Be genuinely curious about people with a dose of strategy, and you've got his formula for success. A retired hip-hop recording artist, he has great storytelling advice. He also shares how LinkedIn is vastly underutilized by nonprofits as a relationship builder, and what you can do to excel there. This is an especially fun and spirited conversation. Brad is an account executive in nonprofit technology at Instill. On Tony's Take Two.
Tales from the Gym. Rob, PhD.
Here is Be Human and Be Yourself for Best Fundraising.
It's a genuine pleasure to welcome Brad Tun for his first appearance on Nonprofit Radio. Brad is an account executive in nonprofit technology at Instill, specializing in helping chief development officers and frontline fundraisers bring clarity and simplicity to major gift work. Brad's approach is rooted in a deep belief that fundraising is fundamentally about human connection. Oh my God, are we simpatico on that? You'll find the company at instill.io, and you'll find Brad very active on LinkedIn. Brad Tun, welcome to Nonprofit Radio.
This is the greatest introduction I have ever heard. I'm ready to run through a brick wall right now. So thank you for this.
All right, I'm glad the enthusiasm is infectious. Absolutely. We have spent a lot of time getting to know each other on LinkedIn, and we got connected by a mutual friend. In terms of your philosophy, that's what I was not aware of. I see you on LinkedIn a lot. We're going to talk about LinkedIn, how you believe it is vastly underutilized. We're going to get there and how personal you are on LinkedIn. But we got connected around your belief in the humanity of fundraising, that which I said I had to digress from your bio. I don't even give the guy a complete bio without me interjecting my opinion. This is how lackluster the host is. Like the guy can't stop but inject his opinion. Doesn't even give a complete bio of the guest before he's interjecting his own editorial comments. All right, but no, we do connect over that humanity, messy. Yeah. Authentic, present. All right, we're going to talk about all that. Share your philosophy about fundraising, about major gift work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think fundraising is about connection, not activity. And most of the fundraisers I talk to in 2025, almost 2026, are buried in reports and systems that don't reflect the real state of their donor relationships, right? Those in between the lines, those soft skills, those things that really make people tick. And I am a firm believer. I'm a firm believer in a lot of things because I'm stubborn. The redheaded stereotypes are true, but I'm a firm believer that connection and human relationships start with a deep-rooted sense of genuine curiosity, where I can seek to understand, not seek to respond, and really be focused on what is the why of this person. And as you know, Tony, I've been listened to the podcast a long time, fundraising is storytelling. And I know every nonprofit leader knows that at their core, it's storytelling, but people don't give because they want to support the organization, right? People give because they see themselves in your story. Whatever your story is that you have hopefully shared with them, they see themselves as a part of that. And we have to be able to give them that opportunity to join our story. I'm going to stop there, or else I'll ramble and that'll be the end of it.
Just hand over the mic. I'll turn mine off. All right. No, there's so much there that I, you know, even at all levels. I mean, that's a high level, which is exactly what I asked you for. You know, I'm nodding, I'm smiling. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. But we get this, idea, this fallacy that major gift officers and fundraisers generally need to present a certain way. That we need, there's a facade. And if we're not professional, if we're not, exact, that we're going to disappoint the donors or the prospects, we're going to disappoint the nonprofit that we love, whose work we love, otherwise we wouldn't be doing the fundraising for them. We're going to let them down if we don't have the major gift persona. Cut that off at its knees, please.
Yeah, I'm with you. And this gets, fundraising is life. It is. And there's a lot of parallels and things that I've learned the hard way through this experience. But all of those things you said, I need to present myself a certain way. I'm going to let the prospect down. I'm not going to get this major gift. I. It's all rooted in self-centered fear, right? It is. And I don't mean that in an egotistical way, like I'm going in thinking I'm better than or anything like that, but I'm focused on myself. I'm worried about how I'm going to be perceived. I'm worried about, am I going to get what I want, which is a gift? What if I don't? What if? Instead of a complete mindset shift where I'm focused on you. And that's where I get back to this sense of genuine curiosity. If I come into a conversation completely detached from any sort of outcome, I don't control whether or not you give. I can't open up your wallet for you. I can't make the wire transfer. I can't. I have to let go of those outcomes and detach. And I have to focus on you, the human being, and get curious. Because if I don't, I'm not going to actively listen and I'm going to miss an opportunity for connection. And when we seek connection first, amazing things happen that otherwise never would have. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I can't remember, but they're like, my business is better than ever. And it got better than ever when I started openly referring people that came my way to other people in my industry because I knew they were a better fit for what they wanted to do. Right. I wasn't aligned, but I started making those referrals, right? Instead of trying to square peg round hole stuff. And then the universe, for whatever reason, my business skyrocketed, right? It's the same thing in fundraising. I think when we look at the human and we're messy and like we talked about and we're imperfect, yes, I want to show up professional, right? I want to represent myself and the organization the right way. 100%.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, I'm going to show up on time for the meeting or yes. Even early. So I know I'm on time.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to respond to messages, you know,
yes.
We're not talking about being messy, like being messy, lackluster and a poor performer. We're talking about being, you know, a messy human being.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like no, here's the secret is that no one has life figured out. Not a single person, right? Like, can we just acknowledge that and just say how hard things are and how unpredictable things are? Do I want to give a prospect the idea that my organization is unorganized and scrambling? And no, not necessarily, but at the same time, I can be transparent with what we need and why we need it without beating around the bush, without coming up with some you know, my vocabulary is nowhere near the level that yours is, Tony. But I can't come up with, right? I don't need to come up with some overarching, incredibly creative way to say that we could use your support, and here's why. Here's what it would mean.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I mean by messy. Is like, I'm not going to say this perfectly. And if you hear me ramble a little bit, it's because I get excited and I truly believe in what we're doing. Like, just level with people.
Yeah. I love the excite. When the passion comes through, it's infectious. You know, being Italian, I tend to wave my arms around, you know, and we're doing this. And we, you know, we had, you know, our census was 15,000 patients on any given day in New York City, or, you know, whatever. Can you imagine 15,000 patients? So, all right. Honesty, you know, just honesty. And when you do make a mistake, like I was saying, you know, you respond to messages. If you don't respond, if you mess something up, just apologize. I'm sorry. The email went longer. I'm sorry it took me longer to get back to that email or that voicemail than I wanted, and certainly than you wanted. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
But let's still meet. I still would like to meet you. Yeah. I just, you know, I messed up answering a voicemail, but let's still get together, because this cause, you know, merits your attention.
It happens.
I
was messaging with a prospect of mine a couple of weeks ago, and her name is Janie, and I typed Jamie, and she called me on it, which she had every right to do. And I responded immediately and just, you know, I think previously I may have got earlier in life, maybe defensive, or gosh, she's taking that a little too seriously.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
What's the big deal? Yeah, right. But immediately I let my guard down, and I immediately own it and say, Janie, first of all, my apologies. I can't imagine how many times that happens to you. My last name is Tun, and you wouldn't believe how many times people glance and they call me Tom. Because, like, I don't know how it happens, but it does. And I know how frustrating that is. So I apologize. And off to the races. And that's a tiny, tiny example of just show up. Just show up. The bar has never been lower for human connection, ever, ever. If we just show up, it's amazing what happens.
Yeah. Human connection and customer service.
That's a great call out, by the way.
I think the average customer service is crap. So we're just asking you to be a little, you just have to be better than crap.
You really do.
Yeah.
I'm trying out some new technology on my end, and there was a bug with it, and I emailed support, and I know it's an entrepreneur that's running it. He's doing everything. And he immediately emailed me back and said, I'm on it. That's all I needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It took the rest of the day, but I didn't care. I wasn't sitting around wondering, like, what's going on? That responsiveness is, you're right. That's a good call out, though.
You talk about quality over quantity.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I think in the sense as it pertains to fundraising, it's being intentional and reaching out to people as human. I think people are so burned out over automation. That's not to say we don't send out a end of year thank you email or something. You know, I'm not in the comms world. I'm not saying that, but I think there has to be intention around building real, genuine relationships. And we're about to be in 2026, and I continue to see.
We are going to be we're airing this in January. So it's
there. You go. My apologies.
See, it is 2026.
It's 2026. We're there.
We're recording mid-December.
We're there, and I still see donors not being thanked. Like, it's unbelievable. They're not retained. So by quality over quantity, what I mean is we got to stop spraying and praying. We got to stop trying to give our major gift officers portfolios of 300, 400, 500 people. There is no way to manage those relationships effectively. None. And you're doing yourself as an organization a disservice by thinking they can. They may not tell you they can't because they don't want to disappoint you, development leaders, but they can't. And you're going to lose way more than you win. That's what I mean by quality.
What do you think is a normal, reasonable prospect pool of responsibility?
Yeah, I'm going to paraphrase here, but our VP of partner success, Eric Franz, will get on me because I can't remember the name of the law, but there's a law out there with number of relationships you can actually, as a human being, and I can't remember it. I'm terrible with that. 100 to 150 is the max. Like that's it. That's it.
Right.
If you're a leader and you're having to split your time, then it needs to be even smaller than that. But I talked to major gift officers and major gift leaders all day, every day, and you wouldn't believe the numbers of portfolio sizes out there.
You hear about 250, like 250, 300?
In the thousands. and managing touch points with automations and it lends itself to being reactive instead of proactive, right? Like I need to wait for someone to come to us or ask something or whatever to bubble up to me rather than being able to manage and build effective relationships, right?
Yeah. Over 150 in a prospect portfolio, prospect and donor. That is antithetical to what you and I are talking about. You can't have human connection with more than, you know, whatever that law is. That we don't need a law. We don't need the law. We just know it's common sense. I mean, there are only so many relationships you can manage. And just to make it explicit, you know, people are falling off the portfolio as time goes by. You know, the folks who you get to solicitation for, and they say no. You know, I'm not at that level with this organization. I'm gonna keep doing my $50 a year or my $500 a year, but I'm not gonna get to the level that you asked me. I'll just continue. Okay, well, that person then, however you define major gift in your nonprofit, that person's no longer a major gift prospect. So they come off the that portfolio, and another person joins them. Joins the portfolio, doesn't join them because they're no longer in it. Right. So the portfolio is evolving, but we're not letting it get above the 150, which is what I've typically seen. 100 to 150 max.
Yep. All right. You got it. All right. Yeah, you got it. And I think people that communicate back with you that they're going to stay at their level, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
We're great. Yeah.
I'm doing my job. That's effective communication, and you never know what might happen down the line, but I'm never going to completely forget them. Maybe that goes to a different department or a different process. But we got to stick with engagement, and that's any information is good, is helpful information.
Absolutely. And you're thanking them for all the giving that led to this solicitation.
I mean,
they've been so loyal that you thought they would, well, you considered them a good major gift prospect.
Turns out
you were right. Your assessment wasn't wrong, but that it's just not, they're not at that level with your nonprofit. Yep. So then you move on, you know, as we're talking about, but you're grateful for the giving that brought them to the solicitation and for their commitment to continue it.
That's right. Absolutely.
And absolutely. I do that a lot in planned giving. When I'll solicit a gift in a will, most typically, but whatever type of planned gift. And the person said, you know, no, you know, my estate is for my children. Or I do love the work, but not at that level, like to include you in my long-term, my estate plan or my retirement plan. But I'm, you know, I'll certainly keep up what I've been doing. You know, well, thank you. Because all that giving brought us to this conversation. Yeah. So thank you for everything that you have done and that you just committed to keep doing. Yeah. Thank you.
What a blessing transparency is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about Brad Tunn. You have a background. You have a very interesting background that drew me to you. This is what drew me to you on LinkedIn at first. I think I first found you through a comment and I clicked on the guy's retired hip hop artist.
Yeah. That's a
tell us about that work.
pretty standard life path, right? For
humble, a bread ton. Yeah, pretty.
I mean, didn't everybody have a hip hop career? No. So, I guess I went to school. I went to Indiana University for sports marketing and management because the movie Jerry Maguire had come out, and that's what I wanted to do with my life. Right?
I wanted to be Jerry Maguire.
Oh right. Yeah. Right. So I had a brief stint in the sports business world and found out very quickly that it was not for me for a variety of reasons. I was a single guy, no kids, living on my own, and didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I did what any rational human being would do. I had a small amount of money in a savings account, not much. I drained it. Went to the local Best Buy, bought a bunch of studio equipment, and set up a studio in my apartment, my one bedroom apartment, and embarked on what I had no idea at the time would become an 8-9 year career as a hip hop artist. I released 4 albums. I toured. I did shows. I would work odd jobs on the side that I was overqualified for to help pay the bills, because you know the Indiana hip hop money was not making anyone rich.
That's not a huge hip hop market.
It's not, even with the internet. And it was phenomenal experience. It's created so many life lessons for me. I can't even begin to tell you. When I started, it was bad, Tony. Like, it was bad. The music was not good when I started.
Well, yeah, you're just, I mean, what did you know from hip hop?
I knew I loved to listen to it. Like, okay. And I think it was a very helpful emotional outlet. I loved the emotion behind it. I loved the underdog mentality.
Who were some of your influences? I may not know them, but who?
Oh, I mean, I grew up in the 90s. So anything Tupac, Notorious B.I.G., Nas, Jay-Z, Eminem. I mean, everything that your parents hope and pray you don't listen to as a teenager. Right?
You became.
Yeah. Now, I couldn't speak to any of those lifestyles because I did not live them. However, that same type of, I would say, emotional outlet and therapeutic way of writing was great for me. And what I found out very quickly is that, man, the sky's the limit when you really, really work hard. I mean, as simple as a lesson as that sounds, like, I was never the most talented rapper. I did get better, thank God to everybody around. But I just outworked everyone and made connections and did things that people were scared to try to do. And it opened up a lot of doors. And I've carried that with me. Like, and as a parent, I can tell my kids the same thing and really believe it, right? Yeah, absolutely phenomenal experience. And it's been, we still talk about it to this day. It's huge. If I'm sure in a closet somewhere in this house, there's a case full of Brad Real CDs still that went unsold from that era. So if anybody ever wants one, happy to ship it out. Nobody has CD players anymore. Listen to me. Yeah. Nobody has them.
Well, you have the discs. All right. So you were Brad Real?
Real. R-E-A-L. That was it. Yep. Yep.
Brad Real. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there still some music online?
There is. Spotify and all those streaming platforms. My last album is still out there. It was called Letters to the Editor. That was 2012. It's still there. It's still there. So go stream it. Occasionally, randomly, I'll get a check in the mail for 17 cents from Apple. It's great. It's really great.
Letters to the Editor. Look at you appealing to the mainstream media.
Right.
In your final album.
That's exactly right. That's
maybe this media. Do. Maybe this medium isn't the best one for me. I'm going to try. I'm going to try editorial. I'm going to try op-ed pieces.
There you go. You got it.
All right. Did you do concerts?
Heck yeah.
How big venues? Wait.
At the peak of it, I opened for, and I don't know if anybody will know who these people are, but I opened for, I played a show with Cypress Hill. I played a show with Wiz Khalifa.
And Cypress Hill is going insane.
Insane in the membrane.
I remember them.
And I played our amphitheater here in Indiana. I played as the doors were opening. So the capacity of the venue is 12 to 15,000, but you know, nobody was really there yet. But I was on the stage opening for Wiz Khalifa. Every one of those, there were, you know, Tuesday nights at the local Hole in the Wall performing for the other rappers and their girlfriends.
Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah, there you go. Plenty of shows in Bloomington, Indiana.
Right. Yeah. So what's that feeling? All right, suppose there's several thousand. Suppose you got 5,000 rap fans. You're opening. Okay, I understand, opening act, but still, you're bringing power. What does that feel like? Thousands of people moving to your words.
I don't even know how to describe it. There is no feeling in the world. Even right now, just thinking about that, my juices just get flowing. There is the adrenaline. I just feel at home there. It's such an expression of art, and I took it very seriously. If people were going to come out, I wanted to act, you know, bring the energy and make the audience be a part of it. But it's like they say, right? I'm a big sports guy, and when football players retire, they say it had nothing to do with Sunday afternoons, right? When you saw me on the field on Sundays, it was Monday through Saturday that I couldn't do anymore. You know, the grind, the practice, I was working 40 to 50 hours a week at a regular job to help pay my bills. And I was doing hip hop for 40 to 50, 60 hours a week on top of that. And it's like, at some point I started having kids and I was like,
Yeah. But the rush of the fans, the adrenaline.
Yeah.
They're moving to your words. They're moving to you.
They're moving to you. There's something really cool. And I've taken that with me. Like, I've never really had public speaking. I do every now and then I'll get in front of a group of people now in different capacities. And I love it. And it's all because of that. Like, it's all because of that. And I've really, really, really enjoyed that part of it.
It's time for Tony's Take Two.
Thank you, Kate. I'll say Happy New Year again. It's only the second week of January, so I'll throw in a Happy New Year there, everybody. I've got a Tales from the Gym. This one's revisiting Rob, the retired Marine, Semper Fi. Very interesting guy, as it turns out. I've only ever overheard conversations with him. You'll remember Rob is the guy who got the sourdough bread from Kim, and other assorted stories about Rob, the retired Marine, Semper Fi. I got chatting with him. You know, he had been talking about a Marine Corps reunion that he was hosting. It was the 250th anniversary. He was hosting at a local restaurant that I've been to, and I'd been hearing about him. I had hearing him talk about it for a few weeks, inviting folks. And then I saw him in the men's room, and it was a little awkward. You know, it was just the two of us. And so I don't know. I felt awkward not saying anything. So as we were walking out of the men's room, and we were leaving together, we didn't do anything in the men's room together, which is just a coincidence that we were leaving together. I asked, how did the party go? The Marine Corps reunion party. So we got talking. And Rob actually is doing his PhD in global policy at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And he's very near finishing his degree. Next month, he defends his PhD dissertation and all the research around it. And that's pretty impressive. A Harvard PhD. He has a master's degree in North Africa and Middle Eastern studies. He did Marine tours in Afghanistan, multiple tours. So this guy is this, you know, he's n not only worldly, like well traveled, but a student of the world. His master's degree in North Africa and Middle East, and he's doing his PhD in global policy. His PhD dissertation, I think it's called "While We Were Sleeping" or "As We Were Sleeping," and it's about failures in American and Israeli policy over many years that led to the Israeli attacks by the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. So he studied that, you know, these not technology, but also military failures, political. I guess, I mean, I'm saying failures. I mean, it's an analysis of all these factors that I think essentially his thesis is that these factors led to the attack. So very interesting. And his daughter is a pediatric oncologist in New York City. So Rob, our Marine friend, Semper Fi, very interesting guy. And I haven't had a chance to talk to him since. This was all in one conversation at the gym. And I haven't seen him since. But I know his dissertation defense is coming up. So I'm obviously going to ask him about it when I see him. Very interesting. Rob, PhD Rob. And I don't think anybody else in the gym knows. I've never heard him talk about it. Interesting when you talk to people, right? That is Tony's take two. Kate?
I'm proud of you for socializing for once in the gym.
Oh, thank
Usually you're making people angry by stealing their spot or whatnot.
Yes, Mrs. Blood and Soil. That's Val. Yes, you're right. I reached out. Like I said, it just felt awkward walking out with the guy who I've seen dozens of times in the gym. So I chatted him. Yes, I opened a conversation. Thank you very much for being proud.
We've got buku buttloads more time. Here's the rest of Be Human and Be Yourself for Best Fundraising with Brad Tun.
So tie that into today's work around this is must be an influence on your storytelling ability. What can we take from that experience of yours and convey it into our storytelling?
Yeah, I think it's all about, it's about being vulnerable. It's about self-discovery. It's about being okay with what I don't control, and the unknown. And what that allows me to do as a human being is to really just lean in and engage with life. If it's fundraising, if it's personal relationships, if it's business relationships, I don't have a sense of fear in what if? What if this doesn't work out? What if by doing this, I don't get to do something else? There's none of these things that truly come up anymore. We all have real life things, right? We all have real adversity, real trauma, real things that happen. And I'm not talking about those. What I'm talking about is the everyday. When I'm able to just show up as truly myself and understanding that things are going to work out the way they should, as long as I'm truly me, and whatever's meant for me will happen. That I think that's where the real lesson is I can't force life. Like I have to live life on life's terms. I can't force things to happen. I can work hard. I can show up on time, right? I can get myself together. I can do these things. Absolutely. Doesn't mean I don't grind. Doesn't mean I don't have goals, right? But there's something beautiful about just letting go and stop trying to fight so hard. I don't know if that's a good response or not to what you were asking, but that's kind of where my mind went with it.
Well, it's personal. It's amazing. So it is very good. It's very instructive. You know, controlling one of the things of many you just said, you know, letting go of what you can't control. You said earlier, you know, you can't control whether the donor is going to make their donor advised fund contribution that you're soliciting or take out their wallet or, you know, whatever. You can't control that. What you can control is how you come, how you present, everything we've been talking about.
Yeah.
You can control your own self and in being your own self, in just presenting as authentic, just coming as authentic. I don't even want to say presenting. It makes it sound like a presentation. Just come as you are. Come as yourself.
And if I share, and I could level with you, if I'm an MGO and you're a prospect, I can say, Tony, I don't know if your why and what you believe in aligns with what we do in our story, but here's why I thought it might. And like, I may be off base. Like it's okay if you tell me that, but here's why I thought it might, right? When you were talking earlier, you mentioned this and we're trying to do that. Does that resonate? Like I can be curious. I don't know. Cause I think, I keep reading too, Tony, and this may be a separate tangent, but I keep reading, you probably see some of the same things that I do, where there's a mindset somewhere in the corner of fundraising where that raising funds, feels like begging. I keep seeing it and I'm like, I don't understand that. Like I don't understand that mindset that like we've already lost if we feel like raising dollars is begging or asking for.
Yeah, that's coming with humbleness and almost contrition. I'm sorry to have to ask.
Yeah.
No, we ask confidently. We ask firmly. We may get no's. We do get no's. You will get
no's. And those are great, by the way. No's are great. That's fine.
Now you know where you stand. As you said earlier, you know the information is valuable, but we don't ask with sheepishly,
yeah.
Awkwardly, so, you know, quietly and contritely. No. All right. You've said it a couple of times. Curiosity. Yeah. I think you're talking about curiosity about people. Just tease that a little. Why this curiosity about people? Yeah. How does this help a fundraiser?
I think then I don't make any assumptions, right? I was talking to a chief development officer of a larger nonprofit last week, and she was telling me a story about how they have different. I was at a school, and this potential major donor had a engineering background, right? All their degrees were in engineering. They were an alumnus of the engineering school and all of that. And the person was on their wealth screening tools. Like this is a prime candidate to give a major gift to our engineering school. Right. And they kept hitting this person with engineering information and testimonies about the engineering school. And they were building a new wing for it and this, that, and the other. And they were getting no traction. Fast forward, they got a meeting with the guy. They walked into his house in person and he's got incredible artwork up. Right. Within his house. And they start asking about the artwork. Long story short, the guy was an engineer because his parents pretty much made him. He always wanted to be an artist and were able to get a large gift for the art portion of the school. Right. So that's what I mean about curiosity, is not coming in with any assumptions and. When I detach, like I was talking about before, then I'm able to come with really no true agenda because I'm not focused on an outcome. I'm not focused on this is how this is going to go. I can have my roadmap about how I run a meeting and what that looks like and what materials to bring and all of that. But I need to really understand like what makes you tick and let the conversation go the way it goes. And that'll lend itself. I have a 2-year-old right now, so I'm constantly reminded of what genuine curiosity is. Now I need to have better questions than why, but that's helpful, you know, never satisfied.
Right. I consider it almost a gift when I can meet somebody in their office or in their home you're surrounded by artifacts. That reveal the person. Where did you catch that fish? Yeah. Whose wedding is that photo from? You have a boat. Where's that home? Are those your parents? Are those your grandchildren?
Right.
I see you went to Indiana University at Bloomington.
Right.
What did you study there? You're surrounded by potential questions, and that's where curiosity, it just becomes so valuable.
It's way more fun. Don't we think that's more fun than like all this structure and process? And I don't know, maybe it's just me because I'm not a detail-oriented guy at my core. I have to really focus on a step-by-step process because I usually just figure out the temperature of the water after I jump in. Like that's
right. But
I just find it's much more fun way to live.
Yeah. Because you don't know what you're going to learn.
You don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's curiosity about people. That's how you'll learn about them, what motivates them. Like the engineer who really wanted to fund the arts. You got something else in your background that you are very open about. You're very open about it on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Your own sobriety and recovery.
Yeah.
How does that help your work?
Oh my gosh. I'm grateful. My journey through sobriety has not been a linear one. I first got sober from alcoholic back in 2017. And my sobriety date now is January 26, 2024. So you can see it's been a journey of self-discovery. And we don't know what we don't know. But it is the absolute focal point and foundation of my entire life. And when I speak to these things, I'm throwing some lingo out here without even realizing it. When I say, don't let go of what we don't control, showing up vulnerable and human, it's all centered in, and self-centered fear. It's all centered in recovery and sobriety for me are these lessons. I am so grateful to be in recovery. I'm so grateful. And the reason for it, I'm pretty confident that I was the type of person without this disease of alcoholism was going to live a fairly mediocre existence. I just, I had some good times, some bad times. I was going to kind of go through life like that. Never truly engaging with my own life, never trying to reach my full potential or grow. It just, for whatever reason, but through all of this, what's been such an incredible blessing is I know when I wake up every day, I have two choices. One is to be the absolute best version of myself that I can possibly be. The other is to lose everything I have. There's no middle ground for a person in recovery, at least for me. There's no middle ground. I don't believe in the word maintenance or maintain. I think we're either growing or dying. And if I'm not getting better or growing or learning something new every day, then I got to be careful. That has been. I just see life completely differently now. And to live a life without fear of what you're going to think of me, fear of if I'm going to get what I want, are you going to take what I have, all these things. And the universe has a beautiful way of attracting like-minded people to you. Once you start to live authentically, you just attract authentic people. It's crazy, right?
Was it the hip-hop period in your life that brought you to the alcohol addiction?
You know what? It's a great question. Looking back, hindsight's 20/20. It certainly did not help. Mm-hmm. What really did it for me was somewhere in my late 20s to early 30s, I developed really debilitating anxiety, like real bad. Panic attacks, the thought of like, laundry to do would put me in the fetal position. And it's hard to explain if you've never been there, but like mental health is very, very big to me. Big deal. And I found out quickly that alcohol made that go away. It made it go away, took away the anxiousness, like just like that. And it became my best friend until it didn't. Until it didn't. That didn't last very long.
It's a very selfish, demanding friend.
Oh my gosh.
It's a jealous, jealous friend.
Wants more, right? Yeah. And what I learned the hard way is that, you know, I was attempting to numb out anxiety or fear and, but you don't get to pick what emotions you numb. So I was also numbing joy and happiness and presence and all of these things. And it was killing me fast. The gift of desperation. I'm fortunate enough that I get to work with other people in recovery a lot. It's something that fills my cup. And I tell people all the time, like, even if I could, I wouldn't give you the gift of desperation. You gotta get it yourself. And because you have to experience that. I'm as hard-headed as they come. And throughout my journey, I thought I had it figured out. And I was doing so well that I created a life that was beyond my wildest dreams. I married the woman of my dreams. We have a beautiful blended family, all of these things. But then I started repeating some of the patterns that I was doing when I had blamed it on my first marriage, an environment that was tumultuous, like a career I didn't want to be in, like all these things. And I'm like, it dawned on me that it was me. And I was on the verge of losing everything that mattered to me. And that was it. That was it. No way out. None. And it was like, you just got to let go. Stop trying so hard. And ever since, it's just been, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, congratulations on where you are.
Thanks. I appreciate
you said
that.
You said it's not linear, so I recognize that there are struggles, maybe struggles every day. You know, I don't. But it's congratulations on where you are, and also just thank you for sharing that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, thank you.
What amazes me about you, Brad, about your philosophy is, I mean, you work for a company called Instill. They're in Instill.io, clearly a technology company, but you're humanity forward.
Yeah.
Do you have any dissonance in the company?
I love that question. And here's the thing. It's why I lean into it. Human is, we've been talking this whole time about to be human, right? How to be human, how to show up more human. And that's, in a world of AI, look, I use AI all day, every day. I use it all the time for work, for my grocery lists, for all kinds of stuff, right? So that I can show up more human to the human parts of my life, right? That's what technology should do. It should fill some gaps where we need it, take away admin, manual things that anybody could be doing so that I have now the bandwidth, the tools, the insights to show up more human. That's what it should do. It should not replace any human connections. That's why if you ever see me posting, if you ever see me commenting, if you ever get an email from me, if you ever get a text message from me, it is me. And there are so many tools out there that promise, you know, gold at the end of the rainbow. If you just automate all your workflows, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Please show up as yourself. Please. There's plenty of other ways that technology can help you. But when you're communicating with another human being, it should be you.
So is it as simple as, you know, the tools that you use in the ways that you use them just give you greater time and bandwidth to take the time to be present with other humans? Is that simple, or is there
you got something? It. No, I think that's it. And maybe see things that I couldn't see otherwise, right? Things that maybe would fall through the cracks. So not to like get too into the weeds, but like if I have a portfolio of donors, if I don't know what to go look for, I won't find it, right? So if I can have things surface to me that I didn't even know I needed, like relationships between donors, or the sentiment of that donor the last two or three times we've talked is going down. I need to nurture that relationship before it's too late. These are the types of insights that where I can now be proactive instead of reactive. Because if I don't know what to go look for, I can't find it. So, you know, I'm staring at a spreadsheet. Who do I want to reach out to today? Well, it's been 6 months since I gave Tony a phone call. I guess I'll give it to him, even though he gives every December. Why am I calling him? Like, what, why? With what message? And I have to take all that time to think about those things before I do it. This is why we burn out, right? Is we're just kind of we're wandering in the dark. I guess that's what I mean.
All right. Let's switch to LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You like nonprofits to be doing a lot more with LinkedIn. You are very active there. It brought us together. There are downsides to the tool, obviously.
Sorry for that, everybody. Yeah.
Putting those aside, putting that unfortunate relationship aside. No. What are we not seeing in nonprofits capacity that we ought to be exploiting?
So here's the way I view LinkedIn. I view it as a neighborhood or a coffee shop, right? And if I'm a nonprofit leader, my donors or potential donors are sitting in this coffee shop and I can pull up a seat right at their table and it's not rude or creepy, right? I can do that. So I can get in the comments. I can post about things that my organization is doing and start to formulate my own neighborhood of who my prospects are, who my donors are, and we're interacting all day, every day. So when I go to make that phone call or that ask or that piece of outreach later in the year, they already know me. We've already had a warmed up conversation, right? I am top of mind. And it is blue ocean. No one else is doing this, right? No one is doing it. And you'll see it out there. It's flooded with salespeople, and LinkedIn gurus and all things that are worthwhile. But in the nonprofit space, I see very little of fundraising leaders out there sharing their why and being personable and approachable. It's one thing for me to have the organization's page, right? Come to our gala, come to our event, and I'm reposting it, right? If I'm Brad, if I'm the development director of XYZ nonprofit, I should be speaking to and posting to the universe why I'm there, what brings me joy, what fills my cup. Start to get in the comments of, if I have a donor database of 150 major donors, I need to find them on LinkedIn, follow them, connect with them, be in their comments. Right? Find out who else is commenting on their stuff, right? And that's how I do outreach. That's how I build connection. And no one else is doing this, and it blows my mind. I've been consistently on LinkedIn I've had an account for a long, long time, but every day for 8 months, okay? And I can't tell you the number of relationships and yes, business I've drummed up, but more importantly than that, community and connection. It's been absolutely incredible and added so much value to my life. You can share behind the scenes moments about the organization, reflect, share donor impact stories, right? Leaders posting with their own voice so I can be human. People will relate to that, right? I want to know. I give to a handful of organizations here in Indiana, and I love a couple of them because the chief development officer posts about moving her kids into college, right? Or just messy everyday things. It is so awesome. And now I have an emotional connection to that organization. When that same person talks to me about having a difficult moment with their kid after school, and then two or three days later is reflecting on a donor story about their nonprofit and then going and making an ask for a campaign, I see the human. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox, but I just think it's untapped territory. I think there's fear in putting yourself out there, which I can understand, but it'll come back to you tenfold.
Yeah, you're being vulnerable. And I think a lot of what attracts people to you and a community around you is because you are so, you are vulnerable, you are personal, you are intimate in a good number of your LinkedIn posts, which I've commented on and told you that I admire that.
I appreciate it.
And I'm telling you now, I admire your vulnerability and it's more than presence. I mean, it's an intimacy. You share some intimate stuff.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think likewise, not just with the podcast, but I appreciate your ability to articulate, I think, what a lot of people are thinking and feeling, but put it into words that makes it digestible for a lot of people. And you're not shying away from things, which I find so refreshing because we can pretend all day long, not just with fundraising, but we can act like everything is wonderful and great. And there's so much good out there. But I think being constructive and always wanting to improve and get better and pointing out maybe some deficiencies and things like that is so important, and it opens up a dialogue. So thank you for you doing that as well.
All right. Follow us both on LinkedIn. Follow Brad first. Brad Tun, T-O-N. No, Tom. His name is Tom. It's Tom or Brad? It's Tom.
Very good. Very good.
It's Tom.
You will not find me under Tom, but you're welcome. I don't know. I'm sure there's a great Tom out there.
Tom Tun. No, you won't find that. No, he's Brad. He's Brad Tun. Brad, you know, leave us with I will typically say, you know, leave us with some inspiration, you know, take home moments. This has been like 50 minutes of inspiration. So, but maybe it's just something we haven't talked about, or you'd like to say a little more about that you didn't. Leave us with something that we haven't heard. Some Brad reel that we haven't heard.
Here's what I'll say. If you appreciate someone in your life, tell them. Tell them. Thank them. I've grown a cut, and you know what? It's awkward for about 5 seconds to pick up the phone for no reason, especially if it's someone when they see your name, they're going to think something's wrong because they don't hear from you very often. It's awkward for about 5 seconds, and then you'll feel 10 feet tall. So if someone means something to you, tell them.
Brad Tun. You'll find him, as I said, very active on LinkedIn. Follow him there. You'll find the company Instill at instill.io. Thank you, Brad. I knew I was going to love this. Genuine pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing all this.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
Next week, zero-click marketing. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.